Welcome to the Unconquered Podcast.
One of the issues with our team right now is mental toughness, discipline, and execution.
Blame no one. Make no excuses. Do something.
Welcome back to the Unconquered Podcast, everybody. As always, I'm your host, Jason Staples. And that's right, you are not imagining things. This is the return after a long hiatus. The longest gap between episodes since I started doing this podcast back in, about 6 years ago? So yeah, it's been a little while. Those of you who have reached out or have been following on social media, you're already aware of this, but the last few weeks have been pretty eventful for me and my family, which has largely accounted for the gap. But the week actually immediately following the spring game, so right when I was getting ready to, when I was doing the preparation to release the post-spring game episode, my wife went into labor and had our first child. So the last few weeks, we've been getting adjusted and settled into that whole process. Many of you out there are aware of exactly how that works. And then you add the additional confounding factor that my wife is in medical school, and that means that we've been particularly busy over the past few weeks. You combine that with the end of a university semester in which I taught four classes, so I had a lot of exams and essays and everything else to grade for, you know, just around 200 students or so, and then had two books to get off to peer review for publication. So it's been quite an eventful few weeks since I last put out an episode, but very glad to be back. Also have just in the last couple days put up a pretty significant dump of material looking at the defensive backs class of the 2019 Florida State defensive backs class, player by player, and also giving a couple of examples of prior five-star type, high four-star type defensive backs and the sorts of things that elite guys look like coming out, so that as with other material that I've put out evaluating the 2019 class, talking about how to evaluate in addition to actually doing the evaluation and talking about the players themselves. So just got that up. I'm also going to go up and I'm going to do a full breakdown of the first half quarter by quarter on Patreon as well. But, and I might do the second half also, but the second half is much less useful in terms of the spring game. But, the other reason, by the way, that I delayed so much in getting this one out is that after watching the spring game, I wanted to go back and take a look at the 2018 spring game and be able to compare back and forth with what we saw in the 2019 spring game. And I didn't want to release an episode until I'd had an opportunity to do that. And given everything else, it just took me a little bit to be able to get that done. That is now in the rearview mirror. And now I feel a little bit more comfortable talking through some of this stuff. So, I mean, obviously it's been a little while since that spring game, but I'm going to go ahead and rehash some old stuff for everybody. And then the next episode, we'll catch up on some of those other off-season topics like the ACC network and a few other things, some recruiting stuff, less about who Florida State's going to get, and more in terms of some evaluation and everything. But for now, I'm just going to go through some of the things from the spring game and basically what we can take away from that, do this fairly quickly just to get an update out there and to talk through some of the things that I saw in that. Now, again, a reminder, the last episode, I spent a good amount of time talking about what I could talk about in terms of what I'd taken away from my visit to Tallahassee, where I'd seen a little bit more than what you're going to be able to see in a spring game scrimmage, where more stuff is going to be kind of held close to the chest. But most of what I'm going to say here kind of dovetails with that, though with the benefit of what I had seen in person, seeing the spring game confirmed a few things and brought a few other things to light. So plenty to discuss here. Now, before I go any further, I do want to make sure that I thank our longtime sponsor, Luis Marquez of Keller Williams Realty in Jacksonville, Florida, who's been on a bit of a tear in terms of listing and selling some material. So, you know, make sure you add to that if you're in the Jacksonville area and you're thinking about listing your house, or if you're thinking about buying a house, that he is the best person in the area to talk to. Even if you're not going to be working in the Jacksonville area and you want the best contact for someone, if you're thinking about buying a house in the state of Florida, give him a holler, let him know you heard about him from me, and he'll make sure he can forward you to someone who can help in the area that you're looking in. But if you're looking in the Jacksonville area, you're talking about a guy who, especially if you're listing the house, he does the best possible photos and video you could ever see to showcase your home, make sure you get it sold quickly for the best possible price, and no one's going to outwork him. So give him a holler, let him know you heard about him from the Unconquered podcast, and let him continue that successful streak that he is on. All right, now I'm going to go ahead and start where, I mean, there are really two positions that everybody is going to be thinking first when evaluating Florida State for next year, and that's the quarterback position and the offensive line position. Now, the first thing I want to point out is that I think that the offensive line position looked significantly better on my visit, and I think it looked better in this particular game as well, in the spring game. Did it look like a good unit? Like it's, you know, you're throwing out Alabama or Clemson out there? No. But it did look significantly improved, and that was one of the reasons I wanted to go back and take a look at the 2018 game, because I wanted to kind of evaluate, like, okay, it's a spring game. You're not looking at unified groups on either the offensive or defensive lines. Am I really seeing improvement here? Am I imagining this? And, you know, this will become evident. I'm gonna flash some of this stuff up on both Patreon and or from both games on Patreon, but there was a significant difference. I mean, all you have to do is go back to the first play of the 2018 spring game where Blackman takes a snap and is sacked in roughly 0.7 seconds. I mean, from like three spots, and there were two sacks on that first drive. I mean, just no time at all from minute one in the 2018 spring game. In the 2019 spring game, yes, there were moments where there was pressure, but it didn't look like that. So that's progress. We'll talk more about the offensive line situation in a moment, but I do want to start with that before moving into the quarterback position. And that's where a lot of the success of this offense is going to hinge on the play at the quarterback position. I think you can make the case even more so than improvement at the offensive line position because of what they're doing offensively, because of what Briles and Clements are doing. They came in, and when they evaluated, they understood, like, here's the limitations that we're going to be working with up front. And you can see already that they've got release valves built in. They've got everything is designed to get the ball out quickly and make sure that the quarterback is in a position where poor protection is going to be a minimal concern. And what they're asking them to do in the run game is, again, I think, easier than what they were asked to do last year. And I think in general, that's more cohesive. I can get to a little bit of that after discussing the quarterback position. But what that means, though, is that the quarterback has to make sure that he is regularly and consistently making the right decision on time and getting the ball out with accuracy. And that's going to be, you know, get the ball out to the now on the edge, those little smokes and things like that on the edge, as soon as you see nothing's there downfield, get it on the edge before a rusher can get to you. Take no sacks, make sure that you're just getting the ball out, and they're giving those quarterbacks every opportunity to do that. That's going to be key. Now, the concerning thing for me is that Blackman at times was a little bit slow in his decision-making and in his timing. You can see there were a few times where he had interestingly, I was a little surprised at times in the spring game that I saw some occasions where he had basically full field reads, where he starts on one side and he ends on the other. That's not something that I generally had associated with the Briles system. And you know, I've got a bunch of Briles film now that, that again, after doing the spring game, I'm going to be breaking down a little bit more on the Patreon channel to demonstrate and discuss a little bit of what to expect from Briles at Florida State. But there were some times where he didn't look to me like he started exactly in the right spot, or he just mechanically was not getting it out quite as quickly as what I would like to see. And you can see that there were a few that were either dropped or they were pass breakups, that sort of thing. That the reason that they weren't complete is that Blackmon was late. That's something that's going to have to get better in the offseason and in camp. The potential is there. We've seen Blackmon make quick decisions. We've seen him with live bullets flying play really good football. But he's going to have to do that, and he's going to have to be able to challenge downfield, challenge defenses downfield, even with getting the ball out quickly. He's going to have to be able to do that for this offense to really be as successful as it could be. So a little bit of work left to do in terms of timing and accuracy. And then there were three should have been picks on like Y crosses on slot receiver crossing the field behind the linebackers where you just can't make that throw in that location from Blackmon. And he's got to know better than that. He's got to do better than that. Again, knowing that he's the odds on favorite to be the starter, these are areas where he's just going to have to be better. Now, on the flip side, Jordan Travis showed me a lot. I mean, I was quite pleased with his feel. Listen, there's some things that he can do better, but his overall feel is something that I was very pleased with. His capacity to hit the back of his drop, stay under control and very comfortable and make smooth, quick reads, particularly between the hashes, was something I was really happy to see. And that's something that I think if he's eligible for this year, that at least gives a guy that I'm confident can run the offense if Blackmon goes down. Now, Hornibrook, of course, is still there. And he may actually, you know, he would be presumably ahead of Travis, but Travis at least is in a position where he could compete to play that spot. And regardless of what happens, as long as he's eligible, and again, I have my doubts that the NCAA is going to make him eligible at this point, that they're going to clear him, but provided he's eligible, he's a guy that at least you feel comfortable with his ability to get there, that the potential is there. He's able to run that offense at a reasonable level. Now, again, I'm grading on a curve because Blackmon is the guy that you expect more from at this stage than Travis. So, you know, if you're assigning grades just on the basis of what they did, that's a little bit different. But in terms of what I expected and in terms of where they are in their respective careers, I was pleased with Travis and I would have liked to have seen a little bit more from Blackmon. Though again, I think both guys are capable of running this offense with some level of success. Now, with that wide receiver crew, which we'll talk about in a moment, it's going to make it a lot easier. But the real question mark coming out is less about the quarterback position, because I think those guys will get there. I think Blackmon is going to get there. I think he's going to understand basically the pieces of where he needs to go. They're going to figure that stuff out. The real questions are up front, and you know, there's some significant improvement across the board. And as I mentioned in the last podcast, even a couple of the guys who were terrible last year were less terrible by the end of this spring. You know, Juwan Williams was at least passable in the scrimmage that I saw and in the spring game. Now, when the lights came on last year, he went into a shell and just looked awful. But if you go back to to last year's spring game, you could see technique-wise and in a couple other respects, some hints that things weren't quite where they should be in that regard. He was better this time than he was last year. Good enough to be a good player at this stage? No. but better. Not, you know, someone that you can at least put out there and to expect to get run over slowly, or to subtly or non, or not, maybe not so subtly hold so that your quarterback doesn't get killed. You know, these sorts of things. Abdul Bello was a guy that when I was down there, I actually wasn't, I actually asked, like, who's 75? Who is that? Because I didn't recognize him. And he was better in the spring game again. Also, similar to what I saw when I was down there, he was significantly better enough that I actually, you know, have some degree of confidence that he could actually be more than just a warm body if he's put out there. Now, best case scenario is neither guy is on the field for next year in terms of starting lineups. But there's some degree of question as to who's going to be where. And coming out of the spring game, my view is that there are basically four starters that you can kind of pencil in on this offensive line. It's really a matter of finding the fifth guy and figuring out where the fourth guy of those four starters is going to line up. But to me, coming out of this, you feel okay about four guys. And those four guys are the transfer, Ryan Roberts, from Northern Illinois. And all you have to do for him is go and take a look at how he performed against Brian Burns last year, which was decent. Is he going to be an all-ACC, all-America candidate? No, probably not. But can he hold up as an offensive tackle? Can he get run over slowly? Can he not just get run around? Can he not be a turnstile? I think so. And he, as a guy with double digit starts, as a guy who was able to compete with Brian Burns at different points last year, gives you somebody that at least you feel like can be pretty decent. So he's a guy you can pencil in as a starter. You can pencil in Cole Minshew as a starter. As long as he's healthy, he's going to be out there. Bavion Johnson at center, pencil him in. Now, there were some things in the spring game. He got run over a couple times. I mean, the reason people have wanted him to be the starter over Alec Eberle the last couple of years is because he's a lot bigger and presumably stronger. Well, he got his butt trucked a couple times, particularly by Robert Cooper in one case, in ways that were not good. But there were some other promising signs. So, but and either way, he's going to be your starting center unless he gets hurt. So Roberts, Minshew, and Bavion Johnson, and then Brady Scott. Brady Scott's going to be he's going to be a fourth starter. The question is where Brady Scott's going to line up. Is he played primarily at guard in the spring. Now, is he going to wind up a starter at guard? Say ahead of Mike Arnold, ahead of Darren Lucas. Is that where his value is? Because really, he is a guard. He's a guard or a center in terms of what he does best. And he might be the best or second best guard on the team. But he also was a passable tackle last year. And with the departure of Landon Dickerson, and what was passed along to me is that Dickerson had a foot out the door when the new coordinator and offensive line coach arrived, and they really never won him back. So, you know, he stopped working, stopped doing what he needed to do to basically belong, and well, bye. Unfortunately, he would have been, you know, he was the most talented offensive lineman in the group, and unfortunately he would have been almost certainly one of the two tackle starters, even though again he's more of a guard. Unfortunately, he would have been one of those five starters. If he was around, you'd pencil him in as one of the five, and then you'd have your five. With him being gone, my thinking is they give, say, Brady Scott a look at tackle. And then maybe slide the freshman Lucas in at guard, and you're willing to maybe take a few lumps where Lucas, or a few times where he just turned the wrong way, he stepped the wrong way, you know, picked up the wrong guy during the spring game, just little, you know, the mistakes that a true freshman is going to make. But then when he got his hands on people, he didn't look like a true freshman. So, and he looked a lot better. I mean, you're talking about a guy who already, in terms of when he touches somebody, he's better than Arnold he's better than the other guys on the team once he gets his hands on you at that guard position. So maybe you roll the dice and you say the freshman gets out there, and now you put Brady Scott at tackle. And, you know, he was at least passable there last year. He wasn't awful. And if you're getting not awful at that other tackle and you get decent at the other tackle with Roberts, and then you get pretty good from the guard center guard, suddenly you've got a competent offensive line. And I'll tell you right now, it's been passed along to me, I'll just say it that way, that Clements believes that they can have a decent offensive line this year. He thinks that they'll be able to get them to do what they need to do in order for the offense to run like they hope. Are they going to be a great offensive line? No. Are they even going to be a good offensive line? No. But Clements is confident that he can put a competent and solid offensive line group out there out of the talent that he has on the roster, out of the guys that he has. Now, if they do that, you've got Scott at one tackle, you've got Lucas, Bavion Johnson and Minshew, and then you've got Ryan Roberts. There's your starting five. Another option, maybe you decide Lucas isn't quite ready, so you have Scott at one of the guards. Maybe Minshew gets hurt again, so you slide Lucas in for Minshew, and you got Scott at one of the other guards. Maybe, you know, Minshew gets hurt, so you have to slide Lucas in, and then you've got you've got Scott that ultimately ends up being your best tackle. So then you have to have Arnold on the field. That's where this gets a little bit tricky, is if there's an injury, if, you know, something changes there, then you have to switch a little bit of that out. The other wild card in all of this, in my view, is Chaz Neal. And I know there's been, if you go back to my evaluation after the 2018 class was signed, my evaluation was that Chaz Neal maybe would be a potential starter as a third or fourth year guy. You know, if he built his body up and really buckled down and all that. I just didn't, I was not real confident that he had the physical potential to really be that, but I thought that would kind of be his ceiling. I'm a little bit less, confident that I was right there. And I'm not going to double down on that just yet, because based on what I saw both in Tallahassee on my visit and in the spring game, you're looking at a guy that's 6'7", super long, about 295, 300 pounds. If he can put on a little bit of weight this summer, you know, maybe starting the redshirt freshman at one of the tackles, Chaz Neal might just be your next best option out there. Now, it would be even better. Jalen Goss would be even better, because I think he's actually further along technique-wise and in some other respects, but he's maybe 265 pounds. I mean, he's just not big enough at this stage. He's going to be pretty good once he gains the weight, and he is gaining weight, but he's a long way away in terms of just the physical side of it. Neal actually has the tools, the bend, the length, and all of that, to where if he can just learn to shuffle and shield, well, you know, there's a lot of guys in the ACC that have been successful offensive linemen with less talent for the position than what Chaz Neal has at offensive tackle. Now I'm seeing why Dave Kelly and the rest of that staff decided to keep him in the recruiting class and projected him at tackle when they took over. He was a guy that I was less keen on. I was, you know, recommending maybe you tell to move along. But I think I was wrong. You know, I thought maybe he could work as a tackle, but I thought the future was a little further along. I think he's got the physical tools to actually be a pretty good player there. It's just a matter of, does the light bulb come on enough for him to be physical enough? Does he have a good enough offseason? Is he reliable enough to match some of the tools that he flashed at different points during the scrimmage and during the spring game? Because if so, now, you know, you've got your four starters, Roberts, Minshew, Johnson, and Scott, and you slide Chaz Neal in there. And if Chaz Neal wins that job, that means that he's actually a pretty decent offensive tackle, and you go to being maybe an average offensive line, maybe even better than average. Provided, you know, that group stays healthy. And then that gives you the chance to maybe, you know, when Minshew inevitably gets hurt, you slide Lucas in there for him, and you've got Scott still at the other guard, and you're in pretty good shape. So that offensive line, to me, is in significantly better shape than what it was going into last year. Now, if one of those tackles goes down, if Ryan Roberts gets hurt in camp or early in the year, well, you know, it's similar to last year in that respect. They can't afford to lose one of the guys that ends up winning the tackle position. That they don't have the depth there. But if they can stay healthy at those spots, they actually could be at least average on the offensive line, in my view. Now, I'm going to, instead of just going straight down on offensive side of the ball and defensive side of the ball, I am going to flip over now and talk a little bit about the defensive side, the defensive line, because this is where things get a little bit more complicated when you're evaluating a spring game and when you're evaluating a team playing itself. Before I do that, I do want to thank my second sponsor, Garage Makeovers. They are the top-rated garage remodeling company in South Florida. This is summertime. This is the time to get your garage remodeled. They've been serving all of Palm Beach and Broward County since 2005, and they will make sure that your garage is the envy of your neighbors. Overhead storage, polyaspartic flooring, cabinet shelving, slot wall, accessories for anything you have. Give Nathan a call. Phone number is in the show notes. But if you have any need, if you are in Broward or in Palm Beach County, and you have any need for any remodeling, or you want your garage to just be a little bit nicer and meet your needs just a little bit more nicely with some nice organization, they're the people to talk to. Let them know you heard about them from the Unconquered podcast. Now, here's where things get a little bit more complicated, because I think the offensive line looked better. I thought that on my visit down. I thought, and that's not just in terms of performance, that's in terms of technique and everything else. I thought they looked better. What complicates things is I thought it was pretty clear that the defensive line is not as talented as it was last year. It just isn't. The depth of talent, the bodies there, the difficulty that they present for an offensive line is just not the same as when they had Brian Burns and Christmas out there. There's a drop off there, talent wise. And the drop from Burns is huge. And it really shouldn't be. I mean, the thing is, you have Josh Kando. He was the number one defensive end prospect in the country coming out of high school. And I'm telling you, when you're down there in person and you stand next to Josh Kando, the guy looks like you built a player in Madden. Like, he looks like a cartoon. But the reality is, when you watch the spring game, you're not seeing Kando and Janarius Robinson, another guy who looks pretty dang good on the hoof. You're not seeing them just abusing the tackles out there. Now, there were a couple plays, and you know, there was one in particular where Kando got held badly by Jawan Williams. But, you know, last year when Burns wanted to, he just ran by or around or whatever with the tackles on that roster. Kando and Janarius Robinson should be doing that. Now, that might mean that the tackles are a little bit better. And that's what you hope. And I do think the technique and other things are better. But these guys should still be kicking those guys' tail. And they didn't do that enough. Where's the pass rush going to come from with this group? Last year, you knew you were going to get a pass rush on passing downs from one guy at least. And Christmas as well could provide that. But I'm not seeing a lot of pass rush from this group at this stage. And that's a bit concerning, at, you know, coming into the season. Kando and Janarius Robinson, really, in order for this defense to be what they should be, it's going to depend on those two guys, one of those guys stepping up and being a dominant player. If they can get a dominant performance from one of those two guys, and more than likely it's going to have to be Kando to really be dominant. If they can get a dominant performance from one of those guys at end, then everything else on the defense opens up. If they don't, well, you know, they're going to have some trouble at different points. They're going to have some difficulty at different points defensively, just because teams are going to be able to run the ball when they want to, and they're going to be able to protect the passer long enough that they're going to have some space in the middle of the field. That's the way it is. Now, at defensive tackle, they got a couple that are pretty dang good. You know, I think you know, both Wilson and Cooper are true war daddies in there. I mean, Cooper has really recomposed his body pretty significantly. Wilson is who they thought he would be when they recruited him. Durden, I thought was meh during the spring game. He's got to step forward and have a good offseason in order to not have a sophomore slump. And you know, they need to get some depth from somewhere else. I mean, is Malcolm Lamar going to finally appear? Is Parks going to get healthy? Is Cedric Wood going to get off of the milk carton? I mean, where are they going to get other that they you need to be 4, 5, 6 deep at that defensive tackle position. And I don't think the depth is quite where it needs to be at that defensive tackle position. And then you look at the flash end. I think Warner is a natural there. I like him a lot there. It hurts losing Peters to transfer though. And I don't know why they don't have Gaynor there, but that's another question. But he's a guy that I think actually would work well at the flash end, at that end that hybrid stand up position. But Warner, I think, can be pretty good there, and I think that's good progress. But you know, I think the real question on the defense is actually how good they're going to be up front, and they need to develop some depth at the defensive tackle position. Need to get a couple guys healthy, a couple guys interested, and get some depth behind Wilson, Cooper, and Durden. And Durden needs to, again, he needs to have a good offseason in order not to have a little bit of a slump. And they've got to have a better performance out of Kando and Robinson. So that's a lot of ifs up front, defensively. Long way to go, defensively, up front. Now, moving back to the linebacker position, I think there's more promise there. I thought that group looked promising, I think is the word to think about, because of the appearance of McCray. I thought McCray was a bit of a revelation in terms of what he brought to the table. I mean, he had a couple interceptions, a couple very athletic interceptions in the scrimmage that I saw, and then was in passing lanes once again as a middle linebacker during the Garnet and Gold game, during the spring game. And then in goal line, guess who's tearing through the gap to make a tackle for loss? Jahleel McCray. So he may well be ready to play and contribute early as a freshman. And if he is, if second half of the year, you can slide him in at the Mike linebacker position and have him as a starter, as a freshman starter, and then you can slide Jackson over to the Will linebacker spot that has been DeKalon Brooks' position for a while. Well, suddenly you got two legit run stoppers at linebacker. And then you got Nasiruddin at the star position, and you have somebody who is basically a big safety there and still comes up and lays the lumber. Suddenly the linebacker position looks pretty good. Alternately, I still like Jaden Woodby at one of the linebacker spots, and you know, wouldn't have, or Lars Woodby, I should say. And you know, I'm not sure that he's the best option at one of the safety positions, but again, we'll see. He didn't play in the spring game. So we'll see. We'll see what's going to happen there, because I think they've got some some real talent that is pushing to get on the field at the safety position. That, you know, if you can move a 225-pound guy back down to linebacker and be that much more athletic as a defense, maybe that's the way to go. But we'll talk about that more in preseason preview and you know, and so on. But I think that linebacker position, because of the emergence of McCray, because of the move of Nasir al-Din, you've now got some options to actually be athletic enough that you're not just giving guys free yards up the field in the passing game, and you're not just getting run over in the run game because you're undersized and slow. That's just not what you want to be on at this level of football. So really at any level. So, you know, I think the linebacker position is potentially going to take a nice step forward from last year, even though the line in front of them looks like it more than likely might take a little bit of a step back. So, you know, give with one hand and take away with the other. Now at the DB position, even more promising. Samuels at corner, we know what he brings to the table. Then you opposite him, you've got Asante Samuel Jr. So Samuels and Samuel, you've got two quality corners. Quality enough that Levante Taylor has been, you know, he moved to the Zeus position, to the field safety position. But Levante Taylor may not even be able to hold on to that position because Akeem Dent looked so dang good. Dent came for somebody's job this spring. He looked better than I expected, and you can go back and you can look at Patreon, my breakdown of him as a recruit, but he was better than I thought he'd be, and he came to take somebody's job, and the question is just going to be who he's going to knock onto the bench to get those reps. Is he going to wind up at the boundary safety position? Is he going to, you know, basically force Woodby into another position somewhere? Is he going to maybe force a senior Levante Taylor down a little bit to, you know, into a different role, into a nickel role maybe or something else? I mean, who knows? But Dent came for somebody's job. And he's not the only guy, by the way. I mean, Travis Jay is going to come in at the corner position and, you know, he'll have something to say as well. He'll compete as well. So, you know, they've got some options there. I think, you know, the real question is who's going to be the starter at that field safety position. Right now, it's Levante Taylor, but maybe Dent comes into there. Maybe Travis Jay walks in there as well. I think Jay more than likely stays at corner, but because that field safety position requires so much in terms of reading and all of that. But with Dent being an early enrollee, he's got a chance to be that guy. Then that backside position, that boundary safety position, you've got, you know, Woodby, you've got Fagan. Maybe Dent moves over there. I mean, there's some options there. And then you've got the corners where you've got talent. Samuel Myers, who is at this point an afterthought after being a starter for the better part of 2 years. Bolden looked pretty good when he wasn't falling down on the one long one, but looked better than I thought he would at corner. Becker was okay. You know, they've got this. The secondary looks like it's going to be a decent step forward from last year as those guys are starting to settle into positions. So that's all progress. Now we're going to finish by discussing a little bit in terms of some of those other positions. Running backs, we're not going to really talk about beyond saying Akers looks healthy. Wasn't healthy last year at all. Looks healthy again. Looks more comfortable what they're asking him to do in terms of getting vertical again, more quickly, suits him better. So, I mean, I think he's primed to have a pretty good year. LeBourne progressing. You know, he wasn't as fast as Akers to begin with, but, you know, obviously a very quick player. And, you know, it's going to take him a little bit more time just to get all that explosion back. But, you know, further along than I think anybody expected him to be at this stage after that injury. So, positives. Then we finish with the wide receivers. And this is a place where, again, it's sort of like the DB position. There's a wealth of riches here. There's NFL talent here. Obviously, Terry is going to be your guy. And then DJ Matthews and Helton are the two guys that Keyshawn Helton. Those are the two guys in the slot that are going to be, you know, taking the majority of the reps there. Although Harrison also, you saw him in the slot as well. So those three guys are going to be your slots. Harrison looks like he's just not quite found his niche yet, by the way. He looks like he's kind of lost in the shuffle right now in terms of where he fits in what they're doing, but you know, they'll all figure that out. It may take him another year. I don't know. And then the real question is that fourth wide receiver coming in after what I saw down there in practice. I thought it might be Pokey Wilson after watching the spring game. That was further reinforced. I think right now, you know, Keith Gavin is still entrenched kind of as that other starter on the outside. He may keep that job, but Pokey Wilson's probably going to be the guy to finish games. And Cam McDonald is a guy that is going to push for time just because of his ability to bring versatility to line up inside and out. And, you know, he brought a lot to the table all spring. So, you know, you're going to see a decent rotation of players, but really, I think at this stage, it's, you know, Terry, Matthews, Helton, Harrison, Gavin, and Wilson are really your top guys. And everybody beyond that, they're really about a year away from contributing. I mean, and this is something that, you know, people have asked me about Young, who I loved coming out of high school, but we talked about how he was going to need some extra seasoning. He's probably about a year away based on what I saw there and talking to, you know, people around the program. He's about a year away. You know, Thompson had the long play, but flashed that ability, flashed the size speed combo, flashed the quick feet. Also had a couple drops, also had a couple things that showed, well, you know, he's got a ways to go. Is he going to be on the field some this year? Yeah, sure. But I don't expect him to be, you know, in the top, say, five guys on the team in catches. Those guys are going to be next year. You're going to see sort of a changing of the guard there, where you're going to see Young, Helton, Harrison, and Thompson as your primary four. You might get Pokey Wilson up there as well. There's going to be your five. But this year, you're still going to have, again, Terry, Matthews, Helton, McKitty. Got to remember McKitty in there because, you know, he's going to be out there. But it's a little bit different. And again, let's not get too far ahead in terms of the hype train, in terms of some of those young guys making some plays. I mean, yeah, Young had a nice touchdown late, but that was in two-hand touch time where, you know, it was a mess. You're not gaining anything in terms of seeing that. It's not what I would regard as a legitimate kind of thing to measure by. And, you know, Thompson flashed, but you're looking at a situation where he ran a good route and the guy fell down. So they're going to flash, but those young guys are about a year away. What that means, though, is that they're so stacked in front of them that even though those guys have some ability to flash like that, the older guys in front of them have NFL talent, and they're gonna get the bulk of those reps. They're gonna be able to stretch teams down the field. They're gonna be able to do some things with the size on the outside in terms of some of that screen game, and they've got a much more robust screen game with what Briles brought to the table, more robust RPO stuff than what they ran last year to help protect that offensive line. And that's using the talent and the size of those wide receivers to their advantage. So this was a quick and dirty, I know we're almost at 45 minutes, but this was a quick and dirty look at what we could take away from the spring at this point in the offseason. We're going to go through as we get into camp, we're going to go through more detailed position previews and break down player by player a little bit more and what they're doing schematically as I'm going to pull some of that stuff from the Patreon analyses that we're doing. But overall those are my thoughts coming out of spring game just on the aggregate, on the big picture. Figure we can wrap there, though. I do want to thank my third sponsor of the day. That is EPR Creations. If you have any need for internet marketing, for a better web presence, any of that stuff, EPR Creations partners with small businesses for website development and online strategy planning. I say small businesses. They've had some pretty big partners, some major universities, in fact. If you need a better website, better marketing, better SEO, they're the ones you want. Let them know you heard about them from the Unconquered podcast. Either way, This has been the Unconquered Podcast, the first episode back in quite a while. Good to be back. I'm your host, Jason Staples. Thanks for listening.
Thank you all very much and have a great day if you want to.